Why do we live in a place that snows in late April?
Because we hate our lives.
That's probably it. I guess that's it. Welcome to the Soderstrom Bubble. It's a snowy spring day, as normal spring days go here. Yeah, it got really cold after a really nice day yesterday.
Yeah, it was down to like 29 last night. Yeah.
But here we are. Today we'll talk about, I don't know, we asked for some questions and some topics. We'll get to some of them today. We'll also talk about our trip to MSP and the fun stuff that we found in searching adventurously, as is our wont,
yes,
when we go to new places. And yeah, so basically, yesterday night, Saturday night, why am I not... I don't know what's going on here. Is this just skipping me? I'm trying to figure out what is going on with this testing. Anyway, all right. Well, the audio is going screwy. Great. So anyway, we asked people about like what they had in terms of just any kind of debate or any kind of topic they could think of. So we're going to talk about the things that you want to talk about. And if you ever want to chat with us, you can go ahead and test us at SDRStromBubble on Twitter. And yeah, we're going ahead and getting ourselves into your questions. One of the questions was, well, first off, I'll address this. Ryan Stelter and Sean, my former boss, Sean Pankhurst, texted me, said, Ryan gave Cooperalls, Pank gave Yofa. We will do that in time. We will do a whole equipment show, and might have to be video just for visuals. So that might be our first audio video take on it all. So we'll get to that in due time. Don't think I haven't looked up the Cooperall thing.
Oh, there's so many things to say.
There's so many and there's so many articles written about it because it started in the... in the major juniors before it started in the NHL.
Right.
And it lasted far more in the major juniors than it did in the NHL. So, got that going for us. We'll talk about this. So, Janet on the Twitter, she asked us about the, what was it? How long do you think the Keenan cursed lasted? So, this is a curse upon Mike Keenan. Mike Keenan and his... I asked a clarification because I've never heard of this curse before.
Yeah.
And I guess it's on the teams and it's on the goaltender because he is Captain Hook when it comes to goaltending. You want to talk about a guy who, you know, is just completely out to get his goalies. It's Mike Keenan. And it's going to be interesting to see how he might actually take up residency in China now because he's coaching the new... or he's coaching the Chinese team next year in the KHL.
Yeah.
So his communistic dictatorship could be...
he's probably going to love it because the culture there dictates a certain level of obedience to your boss. And so...
oh, yeah, he's going to eat this whole thing up. Like, he could be the longest tenured KHL coach in history. that's not going to be happening because that thing's going to last for like 2-3 more years, and then Russia's going to run out of money. So...
it's going to be like the Russian Pens?
Yeah, essentially. It's going to be like the IHL Russian Pens. But curses. Curses, I guess, is a good mentality. For the record, I don't know how long it lasts for Keenan. I mean, the Flames did better after him. The Rangers, eh.
Well, I think Keenan was his own worst problem.
How so?
He was very rigid. I mean, he didn't get the name Iron Mike, you know, out of the blue. One of his GMs, I think it was Bobby Clark, told him, you know, someday you're going to win and nobody's going to want to celebrate with you. So I think it's just his natural personality and he's so driven that he just gets in his own way because he can't adapt to what his players necessarily need versus what he wants them to do. So.
Yeah. That makes sense. For goaltenders, though, I mean, he broke confidence. I mean,
I don't think he had a good grasp of what goalies did.
Mm-hmm.
And by did, I mean, like, mentally, like, how a goalie trains and thinks is so completely different from the rest of the team. I don't think Keenan ever necessarily completely understood how goalies work or how to work with them.
Makes sense.
So yeah.
So I'm saying 4 years. Sorry, Janet, we couldn't be more help to you on that and ease your pain a little bit about a Keenan curse. But I don't think it's going to last too long. I don't think he has the clout of a Billy Goat.
No.
Or anything else, like the Bambino.
Or the burning mortgage.
Right. What?
The burning mortgage. The Maple Leafs burned their... Or the Rangers burned their mortgage in the Stanley Cup. And... apparently that was supposed to be some voodoo
I don't know this one. This is a new one on me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You want to go
It's a curse of 1940. They won the cup and they burned the mortgage. And you know, in the cup. And then they couldn't win after that.
Makes
and so
sense.
It became
a whole thing.
A whole thing until they won in 94.
There you go.
Yeah.
What about, and I know you talked about this, and I brought this one up, you kind of rolled your eyes, the curse of Muldoon. Pete Muldoon.
Well, and my immediate comment after that was like, it's just like the Billy Goat curse, right?
Which was just killing a Billy Goat on the field. I don't know the Billy Goat curse. I know it's a Cubs thing.
Yeah, it's a Cubs thing. And it was like a bar owner who brought his pet goat, and then there were complaints, and he got kicked out because he wouldn't leave his pet goat at home when he went to the games, and so supposedly he placed a curse on the team, and it was actually made up. Like, it was some sports writer who needed a good story to fill some space on a slow day, and that's what the Muldoon curse is too. It's
oddly enough both in Chicago.
Yeah
both in they need the, and this was a Toronto sports writer. Jim Coleman was the one who first mentioned it in 43.
Mm-hmm.
So allegedly, this is a curse that he said they would never finish in first place again.
Yeah, well, Muldoon was he was a really good player. He was a coach, and he coached Chicago for what, a year, I think, and then he got fired. And the team owner at the time, McLaughlin, was
Anyway,
the Blackhawks owner was going through coaches like underpants. I mean, he would just change coaches all of the time. But anyway, Muldoon was the coach for, I think, a year.
Freddie McLaughlin, by the way.
There we go. And so McLaughlin fired him, and Muldoon supposedly said, "You'll never finish in first place again," because Muldoon was fired after a successful regular season but a bad like a failing
postseason. So the Barry Trotz, the Bruce Boudreau situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it kind of right. They won Stanley Cups, but they never finished first in divisional play or league play in the actual regular season until 67.
Yeah.
So to an extent, it was right.
Yeah, but again, there's evidence that one was just made up by a sports writer needing to fill space.
He admitted that he did it to break up writer's block.
Sure.
So
yeah.
Christ, God, if I did that, man, the amount of stories I have writer's block. That's why I haven't written in a while, because I have writer's block constantly. So the amount of garbage that I would make up, it'd be almost a parody site. What I would make up, it'd be almost The Onion for Hockey. We should do that. We should copyright that.
Yeah, that'd be
already
fun.
I think it's already been done. In any case, so that was pretty much, that's a lot of the, you know, there's different curses, like, you know, the Flames have the Honda Center curse now, which is just them
not
losing
being able to win
since the second Bush 2 term.
Yeah.
Since 06. That's over a decade. That's kind of a mental thing. Well, you could say some kind of hoodoo there, too. After, you know, Travel Alberta buys all the boards ads, and just like, throw the Flames in there. They can't win in there. So.
Yeah. I think some of these curses are self-perpetuating. In that, you know, somebody mentions it, and then it's in your head, and then it just, like, feeds on itself from there.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose, and then the next time you go back, you're like, oh, the curse. Okay, we're going to try and break the curse, but it's still inside your head, and, you know, it sort of feeds itself, you know, in some of these. So
makes sense. So Brian, who's mm-hmm. actually given both of us a lovely gift pack back in the day. And gave you that PK Subban card and stuff like that.
Yes.
So, we got a question from him about the chicken on the ice incident in 1988 in L.A. He said, I think it was during a Kings game he had more ice time in the NHL that night than Scott Glennie has in his career, which is a shot at Scott Glennie, who was a former Brandon Wheat King standout who has just not made it to the NHL level. In time and so what was this? Because you told me kind of a backstory, a little bit of a backstory.
You can actually Google it, and there's a clip of it on YouTube where ESPN did a quick story about it. And basically, it was a Kings fan who brought his pet chicken to a game in a bag, and his chicken was wearing a little purple cape, and he was waiting for the appropriate time to throw it on the ice, and I can't remember what the appropriate time was in his head, but anyway. He ended up chucking his poor pet chicken on the ice, and the game sort of screeched to a halt, and everyone was like, the hell is this? What's going on here?
Because the play went on for a bit. Like, and yeah. It was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, well, everyone was further down the ice, and so because it was back by the net. Mm-hmm. So when they finally noticed it was on the ice, the game kind of screeched to a halt, and then they were trying to figure out what to do with this chicken and how to get it. Somebody brought out like a bucket, like they use for the pucks or whatever, and tried to get the chicken into the bucket. Well, if you've ever worked around chickens, you know how.
It's LA, so none of them have.
Yeah. Chickens can be very like flappy, squawky.
Birds. They can be
uncooperative.
Birds. They will be birds.
They will poop on you like nobody's business.
Birds!
Yes.
Just say birds! They can be birds!
So they had to try and get it in the bucket, and the guy ended up being arrested and then released. I don't think he was charged, but he did have to pay a fine of like $1,000 to get his pet chicken back.
Yeah, even in those times, that's kind of animal cruelty.
Yeah.
So and that brought me to thinking about things that have been thrown on the ice prior.
You mean like that lovely slab of Alberta beef?
Yeah, Alberta beef, yes. Well, why wouldn't you want to throw
No, don't throw beef.
No, well, yeah, don't throw Alberta beef especially. It's fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
So this was in 2006.
Yep.
Throw the beef in Detroit, and they did it. It was a DJ's idea, apparently, much akin to the Detroit Octopi.
Yeah.
And the Octopi is the most legendary. What's the story behind the Octopi for those who may not know it and just think it's a wacky thing?
Well, it started with two brothers. The Cusimanos, Cusimano, Cusimano.
Correct.
Their family owned a fish market, and they were devoted fans, and they thought, okay, well, what can we do to, like, help our team? Because, you know, they're in the playoffs. Like, how can we, what can we do? And they figured out that an octopus has eight legs, and hey, look, you need eight wins at the time. This was the 50s, to win the cup. So they took an octopus, they half boiled it, they experimented a little, and they, because they work in a fish market, they knew that you have to sort of half boil it so it's stiff enough to hang on to so you can sling it onto the ice. And Pete Cusimano brought it in a paper bag. Like, that's it. He wrapped it in some, you know, paper, wax paper, whatever, put it in a brown paper bag and took it with him to the game. And he said to the lady sitting next to him, he's like, okay, you know, please don't scream. I'm going to pull out this octopus. And she did scream a little, and he sort of sidearmed it, like, chucked it like
almost a frisbee?
Yeah, like, and it landed on the ice, and somehow it got to be a thing, and
you got to figure, that sidearm, like a frisbee, kind of a good method, any kind of sidearm.
Yeah.
You're not going to throw it overhead.
No, he said you can't throw it overhead because it will just, like, land right in front of you, like, nosedive like a bomb.
Exactly. It's such out of proportion with the big flop of head and the drag.
Yeah, he said you had to grab it by the legs and sort of sidearm it. Yeah. And
almost like a boomerang.
Yeah. And his their dad used to yell at them because at the time octopus was kind of a delicacy. And his dad would yell at them that they were wasting a perfectly good dinner every time they took an octopus to a game.
Hey, what are you doing? You're packing an octopus. You're stupid. You're stupid to make an octopus. We're going to put it in that. We're going to put calamari. We're going to put calamari. You're stupid.
So something, I think that was a dramatization of what could have happened.
You know, one time somebody, one time a long time ago when I first started doing NHL history, someone asked me about the history of the octopus, so I wrote up the little article, and I made a calamari joke in it, And some dude in the comments just went on like forever about the difference between calamari and octopus. And I'm like, okay, one of us needs a life, and I'm pretty certain it's not me.
I'm pretty sure it's both of us. So that, you know, leads into more modern things. Throw the snake. Throw the snake in Phoenix.
Oh, God. I'd block that out of my head.
So they throw a snake.
Yeah.
The rats. The rats in Florida.
Well, that one has a...
Does have a backstory to
that,
it.
Yeah, that one does have an origin to it. It was a, what, Mellonby?
Yeah.
He saw a rat in the locker room, and he smashed it and threw it against the... Like, he bashed it with a stick, and then he scooped it up and threw it against the wall. And for a long time, you could actually see they took a permanent marker and circled the spot on the wall, and... like, that was the apparently some sort of good luck spot on the wall where the rat was killed. I've stopped questioning their logic. But anyway, so he killed the rat. He went out and he got a goal and an assist. And
well, he didn't smash it and then throw it against the wall. He one-timed it into
the wall. Oh, that's right. He one-timed it into the wall. Yeah.
And they had a magic marker that said, RIP, Rat 1, October 8th, 1995. Two goals for the Panthers that night. And Van Beesbrook, John Van Beesbrook, said it was a rat trick.
Yep. And that's how it started.
And the next thing you know, rats rained down with the iconic moment of Patrick Waugh hiding in his nets.
And well, they did a smart thing, too, with, I think it was Orkin. Like, they were sponsored by, they somehow got it sponsored by Orkin, which was brilliant.
Yeah,
you know?
Genius. Yeah. That's when they knew how to market before everything went crashing down.
Yeah.
Other things thrown on the ice. We got hamburgers, of course, the Hamburglar.
Waffles.
Waffles, jerseys.
Jerseys.
Leopard sharks.
Catfish.
Catfish. Oh, yeah, the catfish.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out this leopard shark thing. Apparently San Jose tried to get into things.
Yeah, no, San Jose needs to stop. And they need to find a better chant than the...
Shaw Arcs.
Yeah.
One syllable, folks. Let's get it together. The Brotrick.
Oh, well, there have been several.
Well, the first one, Jeff Cowan.
Jeff Cowan. What year was that one?
2006.
Nah, there were ones before that.
Like?
Luke Robitaille and Eric Lindros. Mm. And I know this because the Wells Fargo Center has a section along their lower concourse that's plexiglass, and it has, like, notable hat tricks. By Flyers players, and it has like a bunch of the hats that were collected off the ice from that hat trick, and then they're put behind this plexiglass, and Eric Lindros has a bra in it. I remember this because I took a picture of it. I was like, how did you let this get by?
Yeah,
because normally they don't do that. They don't allow, like, you know. And then there was the grandma who threw her bra.
Go ahead. I'm not going to question you on this.
Yeah, it was like, it was fairly recently there was a grandma who threw her bra on the ice for a hat trick. I know there was one that hit the ice for Luke Robitaille as well.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Tennis balls.
This would be college, wouldn't it?
This would be.
Yeah.
This would be Dartmouth and Princeton. So every time, the tradition started in 98. It's from the NCAA website. Because they did a thing about the weirdest traditions in college. Somehow, the only one for UND is the middle where they do the Coldplay laser light show.
Really?
I know, right?
That's no, because I mean that's just no. UND has more than that.
But they've been doing that since apparently 2015. Like, oh, turned into a Coldplay show. That's why it was far down the list. They just gave up.
No, UND's had other things.
Oh, sure.
So,
but Dartmouth. It started in '98 when a Princeton fan. Student threw a tennis ball at Dartmouth's goalie after he gave it a goal, and then every time that Dartmouth plays Princeton after the first goal is scored by Dartmouth, the Dartmouth kids throw, the student section throw tennis balls at the Princeton goalie.
Oh, God.
So, there is video, you can look it up on YouTube, Dartmouth versus Princeton tennis balls, and there's stuff there. Of course, you got fish in New Hampshire and stuff like that. But the one thing, teddy bears.
Oh, that's my favorite. I want to go to one of those games.
Yeah, well, you got to buy tickets like a year in advance for those.
I know.
Especially in Calgary. But yeah, the teddy bear toss game, especially in Calgary, always a fun time.
Because
like 25,000 bears just that's thrown onto the damn ice.
Yeah, that's the game I want to go to be honest, is the Hitman teddy bear toss. Like that's
an event.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, and that's one of the other big things I'm trying to find.
I'm going to go big with that one. I'm going to go to Costco and get, like, the largest teddy bear I can find.
It's been done before, though, you know?
Well, yes, but what? I just find it amusing bringing a teddy bear that's bigger than I am.
That doesn't take much. Here we go.
Yes?
I'm trying to think of other traditions and stuff.
You know, there are analysts and whatever that keep asking, well, how do they smuggle in these catfish and these octopus
pants?
And I'm like, it's called a Ziploc bag. I mean, it's not like you're duct taping a raw octopus to your leg or something. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you could, you never know.
You could, and if that's your thing, you know, who am I to judge? But
exactly. Don't be that person. Birch duck, great name. We got ourselves teams that moved and the fans who never got over it. Number one overall, I would
Nordiques.
Say Quebec City with a bullet.
Followed closely by Winnipeg. They have a team. They have the Jets, but they're still pining for the original Jets. You know what I'm saying?
That the team or that magic, the team wasn't even that good when they were there.
Yeah, but no, that's what they're pining for, is that atmosphere and those memories and, you know. So, yeah, Quebec first. Winnipeg second, definitely.
I'm trying to think of other. I would say Toronto for a second team. Or Hamilton to an extent.
You know, Hamilton, I don't know if Hamilton is really so much as, you know, we want a team back as a, hey, look at all the financial opportunities.
I suppose. Ow, bit my lip. I think inside of my cheek. Not fun. Hamilton's just there.
Yeah,
like.
I mean, they haven't had a team since, what, 1925? So yeah. It's not like there's any fan base with living memory agitating
for it.
And they have
an OHL team, and I think the big thing is when Balsillie was around trying to get Hamilton into to the NHL market by moving the Predators or the Penguins or whatever
sure.
teams he could get his hand on.
Well, and they were mentioned before as a possible relocation spot, like even as far back as when St. Louis was going under.
Mm-hmm.
They were not necessarily like a top two possibility, but they were within a, you know, top five. And that was, what, 83,
84?
Somewhere in there? Yeah. So I think Hamilton is nursing a sore spot from having the carpet yanked out from under them mm-hmm. multiple times, which is fair.
You know, Kansas City has an arena. I don't see anybody pining for that except for a few, like, renegade fans and stuff like that. It almost seems to be only Canadian markets for hockey.
I don't know, Hartford. Hartford still.
Yeah, you know what? Hartford, but they're not as.
They're not as in your face about it?
Yeah, they're very low key about it. It's like, hey, remember these old times? You can still have it.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Islanders go there. You know why?
Because
I haven't heard anything about the AHL going back there next year.
Interesting.
They have not re-signed an extension for their lease. I have emailed the Wolfpack and the XL Center, and they have said nothing back to me. In January of 2016, an extension for this season was announced.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost 5 months past that date. So I'm wondering if there's not just a huge big, because they had to make $250,000 in renovations if they want to be NHL ready. I think they need to make the renovations in general.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Hartford low key not going to get a team now.
Could be.
You're right. They're not as in your face.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a completely negative way to Jets and Nordiques fans, but it's almost like a little child tugging at your pants, like, hey, mom, you know, like that's how they feel. And then Hartford's just like, hey, we had a team. We like that team. We want a team back. Won't you come look at our arena? Like they're
Was Minnesota like that?
Because I can't remember that far back. Because they got taken away the same weird circumstances that Winnipeg and Quebec got taken away.
Yeah.
And that they just couldn't afford it. In that case, the owner, Norm Green, was just the dick about it.
Yeah. I think they never forgave Norm Green. And I know they haven't to this day because if they mention the North Stars at games, you can still hear people saying, "Hey," I mean, like chanting like "fuck Norm Green." Like, it's still there. The bitterness is still there. But I think Minnesota's always assumed that they would have a team back. It was just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just too much hockey and too much opportunity and too many fans, too many players, there was just so much there that it seemed inevitable. So it seemed like they just had to bide their time and make the right pitch, and here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll see if any Quebec City is ready to go.
Yes, they
just need a team. Who knows if that'll come ever?
Yeah,
Seattle's. Everyone wants Seattle. I think a lot of low key Seattle people want hockey there. It's not going to work there. I'm sorry. I don't care if you have a rivalry with Vancouver. Hockey will not work in Seattle. NBA, NFL, MLB. Then MLS. I say MLS would be more popular than the NHL. NHL would be fifth out the gate.
Probably.
And that's bad. That's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good for business.
Well, some of it's a chicken and an egg question. Like, you need the grassroots support, but how do you get the grassroots support? You know? Like,
well, you need an NBA team first, and that's what Seattle's going for first, is they want an NBA team.
Right.
And then they'll think about NHL.
Right.
So... That's I think the loudest, most vocal Quebec City going away.
Yes.
Going away. With that. Is there any other questions we got? You guys on iTunes, yes, we're part of the Face of Hockey Show media faction. I like that one better than the media regime or the media empire.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's MF.
Ah.
It's FOHS MF. We could take that so many ways. There's superstitions that I looked up to.
Yeah.
Not stepping on the logo, which is the stupidest superstition ever.
Oh, it's so dumb. It makes no sense.
No. Not touching the cup or the trophies. Not touching the cup if you won it. Not touching the conference trophies when you win it.
Mm-hmm. And that one's fairly new, too.
Yeah. New-ish. But people still touch it and it doesn't matter. They're like, yeah, screw it.
No, people just need something to blame a loss on. That's all it really is.
Lucky Looney, the doing up your gear superstition. Playoff beards. What do you know about the playoff beard? Because that's a big one that keeps coming up in terms of tradition and turns into superstition.
Oh, yeah, that was the Islanders.
In 80. 80.
Yeah.
Was there any story behind it? I'm just going to grow this out.
Yeah. It was a hard series, and they just, started growing beards, and they were winning, so they said, okay, well, we're not going to shave until we stop winning, and there you go. It's sort of like, I'm not going to change my lucky socks until we stop winning, that was the mentality that started it. It's pretty basic.
Stan Mikita, cigarette toss. After each period, walking out the ice, just flicking it over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Out of the days. Oh!
What?
The Patrick Waugh superstition.
Oh, the toy elephant?
Yeah.
Or his goalpost?
The toy elephant. Everyone knows the goalpost. Toy elephant one's a little bit lesser known.
Well, yeah, that says 90. That would be
93.
93, yeah, because 11 wins in a row. So they had just lost the first two games to Quebec.
I think so, yeah.
And Patrick Waugh gets in this cab, and the cabbie says, "Hey, I know what you need." And he hands Patrick Waugh this toy elephant. And he said, every time you need some good luck, you squeeze the elephant. So Patrick Waugh gets out of the cab. He's like, yeah, okay. Thanks. See you later. And before the game, he squeezes the elephant. And sure enough, they start to win. So then he and another player squeeze the elephant before every game. And 11 wins in a row and Stanley Cup.
And the time they didn't.
And then... The cabbie tracked him down and asked for the elephant back.
Lord. That's not good.
Yeah.
So, can't do that. Sorry,
no.
Sorry, champ.
and also the Buddha.
Oh, yes, Tom Chorsky's Buddha. This would have been 95, 96, or 96, 97?
96, 97.
Okay. So, Tom Chorsky wasn't having a great year, and the All-Star break rolled around. He goes off on vacation to the West Coast.
At the time, Chorsky played for the Senators. Let's put that out there.
Sorry. And he found a little, wooden carved Buddha statue for $5, and he thinks, okay, this is cool. Brings it back with him. And he puts it in his stall. And all of a sudden, he starts scoring, and he's scoring over the second half of the season. He's scoring 14 goals, which, you know, is just a hell of a season for him. So pretty soon, his other teammates start getting in on this, and they start performing like a little candle and incense ritual. Like, it almost starts to sound like Jobu.
It does.
And so then they start taking it on the road with them, and, you know, they're doing the whole ritual on the road, and the Buddha has such an important place in their heads with their team that when they do the team roll call every day, the Buddha was part of the roll call as well. They got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, but they apparently had signs that were like Buddha power with the Sens logo and whatever around town. So, you know.
For a team that had as much craptastic luck as they had in their first few years, you take any little thing.
Yeah.
Hell, even make it to the first round's like a cup victory for them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's better than a couple years before that Bruce Driver.
He would have been with the Devils at the time.
No, a couple years before 96.
Yeah, he would have been with the Devils at the time. Bruce Driver never played for the Ottawa Senators.
Okay. Then that's not who I'm thinking of. But there was a Devils player a couple of years before who hit a scoring drought, and for some reason, I don't know entirely how or why, and I really don't want to know at this point, but he swished the blade of a stick in the toilet, and then he went out and scored a goal. So then he started swishing his stick.
That could have been Bruce Driver then, because you just said Devils and we were talking about the Senators. You kind of just changed drastically then, there.
Yeah, it could be, but he started swishing the blade of a stick in the toilet bowl for luck.
It's not superstitious if it works.
It's not weird if it works.
Yeah. Okay, what the hell
is it? Yeah. There have been all sorts of strange little ones over the year. That's how you ended up with the massive pregame brawl over shooting the puck into the net, into the opposing net.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... You know,
that gamesmanship stuff where we had to be the last guy off the ice for both teams. And
yeah.
I can't remember who it was. I think it was Red Wings and Maple Leafs. They did rock, paper, scissors. It was like Sandy McCarthy and Probert or somebody.
Yeah, and there's always the guy who has to be the last to tap the goalie on the pads. And, you know, Stan Bowman had a lucky comb.
Scotty Bowman.
Scotty Bowman had a lucky comb. And the funny thing is, like, he had the lucky comb. And then when he moved to Buffalo... he couldn't find it. And the whole time he was in Buffalo, comb never reappeared. And then he moves again to, what was it after Buffalo? Was it the Pens?
Pittsburgh? Yeah, I think it was Pittsburgh after that.
After
Buffalo, was that Montreal? Later years of Montreal? Because he coached Buffalo to the Stanley Cup in 75.
Yeah.
And then
he moved to Montreal.
Yeah.
And when he moved to Montreal, the comb showed up again.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's bizarre. A little bit creepy there.
Yeah. So, you know, for whatever that's worth.
Exactly. Not much else I can find in terms of superstition. Not walking the logo, tapping this. All right, stick salute. Someone mentions the stick salute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of this. This started in 2000, like after the lockout in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of everybody doing it now.
It's a European thing.
Yeah, I know. I don't like it. Not European. It's not Europe. Go back to where you came from. Go back to Russia, Oates. I've never told you that story, have I?
No.
You go back to Russia, Oates. I might have to save this one for off the air.
Okay.
So it's a broadcast monsters thing. Anybody who listens to the Face Off Hockey Show knows this story. So there you go. And the handshake line. I'm tired of the handshake line being called the classiest thing. I'm tired of it. It's not classy. It's fake bullshit.
Yeah.
It's fake. Oh, those guys. It's cliche. It's the cliche of all cliches. I'm yeah. also tired of people saying, please like my sport by seeing these. You want to see the NBA. Playoffs is the worst time for anything. Yes. Because it's just like, oh, our playoffs are better.
Oh, like a Colin Cowherd, that tweet I was making fun of.
Colin Cowherd in general is terrible.
I figure he deserves to be made fun of, which is the why I responded to that one. But otherwise, I just leave those tweets like alone. I don't care. Like, I'm not going to convince you to like hockey, and you're not going to convince me to like baseball by mocking hockey. So, you know, just leave me the hell alone. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know. I'm the please like my sport people are just.
Yeah.
You can like hockey, but don't slag other things when they're making yeah. much more money. And much
well, and
more...
there are sports writers who do it too, and that
yeah,
should
no.
know better.
No, they, yeah,
they should really know better.
But you gotta rally the masses somehow.
Yeah,
you think people like talking about sports, the sport they cover 24/7? Hell no.
Well, there's a reason why some of them cover basketball and NBA or NHL.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you see, like the one person that I, you know. Like Leahy and Wish and the Puck Daddy guys and
mm-hmm.
Merrick and stuff like that. So it's like they're in the summertime mode. They're not going to want to talk hockey with you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll talk a little bit, but they're also going to talk about their interests too. Like to yeah. see the wizardry that both Leahy and Wyshynski craft when they're going through just trying to weave out of the hockey discussion into something much more manageable.
Yeah,
is great. It's a master's class in discussions with fans and interacting with people. It's fantastic.
I think the second time I met Wish, we ended up talking, like, arguing over Batman villains. Like, yeah. we didn't even really talk. Like, once I was like, I don't really care if you just got a text from Steve Eisenman. I don't, like, I want to know your opinion.
Don't get me started on Steve Eisenman.
I know.
Like, don't get me started on him. That's one of our great draft stories. We're sitting there doing Andy Rooney off, me, Wyshynski, and La, which is Inspector's Hockey. And we're just doing Andy Rooney. Impressions, and then next thing we know, our waitress is gone for an hour and a half. Poor Sean Leahy doesn't have his chicken fingers because Steve Eisenman just stole her away from us and just wowed her with whatever he's got to wow her with. Hey, did you see me beat John Casey? Hi, go bar down, baby. Yeah, give me some Amstel lights because I'm pretty sure he drinks Amstel. That's not that guy.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a master. If you ever get a chance to just hang out with Wyshynski and just see the master's class of him dealing with people, it's tremendous.
Yeah,
I'll always put Wish over. Wish always tries to put me over whenever he can, so I'll put him over. Until he slags me, and then I'm just going to rip him off. Like, you bastard, you started off in a bar doing a radio show like I did. Let's stop fucking acting like we're cool.
See?
Sure, you got a big time job. Look at me. I'm in a place that's snowing in late April. Take that. Oh, wait.
See, mostly what I remember of Wish is that he's kind of a goofball.
I love him.
He's a nerd.
He's so great.
And I remember sitting next to Leahy and just having like the most awkward pauses because we didn't really know each other. So we
no,
didn't
that's
really...
Sean Leahy. No, that's him.
And I was like, is this normal for you? I'm just going
to... Sean, I love you if you listen to this, but you know it's awkward pause central between him and I. Like... Like, we just sit there, sitting there. Like, we watched, what was it, at the last draft, we were watching at the, whatever the bar was there, 716 or whatever the hell it's called, whatever the area code there is. We're just sitting there, why is me, Johnny P, and Sean Leahy just hanging out. Next thing you know, there we go. We're watching soccer, and it's just quiet. It's awkward pod, like, little small talk here and there. That's just hanging out with, that's why I love hanging out with Leahy, is just
the he's so chill.
He's awesome. He's an awesome dude. It's not awkward, it's kind of nice. Nice not to have to say anything.
Yeah, there's
but
no...
But there are those awkward pauses when you first... The icebreaker for us is when we were in Minnesota with the Puck Daddy boys. First time I met Leahy was in the Thursday of the draft in Minnesota, and we just got him a boatload of limes because he's like, just get me a vodka Sprite with limes. And Johnny just coated the rim of the glass with limes. And then someone resembling Peter Griffin came and stole Leahy away. So me, Wish, and Johnny, as any good friends would do, as this Peter Griffin and Margaret Cho look-alike, stole Sean Leahy away from us. We did what any other good friends would do and left him at the bar because we're not going to be a part of that. The hell with him.
Well, do you remember what he did in Pittsburgh?
He did a lot of things in Pittsburgh.
No, pretending to be the bouncer?
We weren't there for that.
No, we left. Home. But I heard the story after, and I was like, "Oh,
that's tremendous! Yeah. I wanted to be there for that."
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'll be there for stuff this year. So.
Yeah, we'll be there. Come Heller, we gotta look at hotels and stuff too.
Yeah.
Gotta get on that with Johnny P. He's our booker. So we'll see about that. But one travel thing that we had this weekend.
Bum 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 bum.
We went to
Thursday
on a Thursday.
Yes.
So we went to a concert at the Caboose. It's a great place, name for a place.
Yes.
Great bar, too. Yeah. Like, it's just a weird setup, but just a nice little area.
It was very narrow.
Very narrow, and then it just spread out to a concert, and you had, like, your medieval times seating at the top there.
Yeah.
Which is good for just chilling and not being in the pit, because I realized, these little hardcore kids work out. I would get thrashed if I even try.
Yeah, get your nose broken without even trying.
I just turned 34. I'm old. These kids are like 18, 19. Like, okay, whatever.
And they were thrashing about before it even started,
it was amazing. So, started off with Cities of Eve, who was the first guy there.
Yeah.
He was weird.
It was like urban Moby.
Yeah.
It was good, but his levels, like his sound levels, were so off that it was hard to enjoy.
And he wasn't using the microphone. He was using the microphone in his mixer thing there.
Yeah.
It didn't come over as well.
Yeah, like you could hear he was saying words, but you couldn't understand it. Like it was just like random vocalizations.
It probably works well on the record when the mix is good, but when in a live setting, when you're using a ton of bass, not good. Then Basement was up after that. Their lead singer was super sick.
Yeah.
But they still put on a decent show. They put on a good effort. Then Touche Amore came on, and they fucking brought it up another level. My God, that energy.
This might be my new favorite band.
It's the energy they brought about, my God.
Yeah.
It was tremendous. And then Thursday, which was a band I've been waiting to see since forever, came out, and that was a fun time. Just to, I thought their favorite, we're going to play some old shit, but all our shit's old, so. Like, yeah, you guys haven't put out a record since 2011, so you're well past it. Hey, we're going to put up some new stuff if you're not going to put out a new album.
Yeah.
So it was a fun time, and then afterwards we went to a classy looking Denny's.
It was super classy looking, weirdly classy. And our waiter was super polite and cheerful, and
happy to be there at midnight.
Yeah.
So, then Friday you went to the Guillermo del Toro museum exhibit at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts.
Yeah, Minneapolis Institute of Arts.
What was that like?
Oh, it was so much fun. Oh, it was like walking into my dream house. It really was. This is all stuff from his house, from his actual home.
Right.
And so there's like a life-size statue of Edgar Allan Poe sitting in an armchair. And it's got a rain machine because he said he always wanted a room in his house where it was continuously raining. And so he's got a life-size statue of Lovecraft, and he's got all of these paintings and like original concept art for Sleeping Beauty, like the old Disney cartoon, and they had digitized his journals from like his concept journals for Hellboy and that sort of thing. They had props from Hellboy and Pan's Labyrinth. There was a statue of one of the creatures. I have a photo I'll put on Instagram. From Pan's Labyrinth, the first creature, when you walk in, there's like this ginormous arch, and then the first creature when you walk in is like Death from Pan's Labyrinth. There was costumes from Crimson Peak and little video clips playing from his movies, and it was amazing, and it was creepy, and it was wonderful, and I wanted to move in. So, yeah.
I went to malls while that was happening, because that's not my show at all. So, yeah, I went to malls. That was something. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed going to malls. So, that was that. And then afterwards, we went to...
Electric Fetus.
Electric Fetus for just look around, because it's one of the... What's that? What is the thing about Electric Fetus?
Electric Fetus is one of the... it's like one of the oldest record collectives in the country. So, oldest continuously running.
Yeah.
It's been there since like 1968 or some such. And... I think they started as a punk collective, so yeah.
And they were filming a lot of stuff because that was when we went. That was the year anniversary of Prince's death, so they were filming stuff for news and I was shocked people were already lined up for Record Store Day because of the Prince album and other stuff that was going out there. So I'm like, you guys are going to freeze your asses off. You're dedicated. Damn it.
There's some good stuff coming out. So
that came out.
Or that yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So, and then after that, we went to Tom Reed's. And
I'm a little obsessive about going there.
You
when
like
we...
your poutine.
I do.
It's the Applebee's for hockey fans because there's lots of NHL hockey memorabilia and stuff hanging up on the walls.
Yeah, and you get the chance to run into Tom, and he's a super cool dude, and he tells really great stories. And
yeah, he was out. We didn't get a chance to speak with him this time.
Yeah, he was kind of busy.
He was out and around trying to, you know, be a restaurateur.
Yeah.
Then we went to Westcott Station Antiques, which is right down the road from Tom Reed. So we walked down there, and they had a huge... Once you walk in the door, they have a huge hockey collection of just Minnesota Fighting Saints and just arrows with the hockey stuff there. And they had old goalie pads. They had old sticks, old memorabilia.
Posters.
Posters. All kinds of wacky stuff. Pucks.
Yep.
Pins. And then we got a lot of media guides. We got seven guides.
Did we get...
I know we got a couple caps ones.
We got six total.
Did we?
Yep. Two caps, and then the Preds and Thrashers inaugural season, and then the Leafs.
Final season, MLG.
Yep.
And then this media directory for the NHL in 2002-03, which I still can't get over for the sheer fact that it has, like, the writers, like, it gives you all, all right, so I've turned to the Capitol, so it gives you the arena address, the practice facility address, all the things there. Then it talks about beat writers. Talks about credential procedure. The thing about the beat writers, it gives a little icon if they travel with the clubs. Then it gives their home phone numbers.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody who said the 8485 one had their home addresses on there.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. I mean, even like college media guides did that.
Well, I'm looking right now. The team photographer has his home address there.
Yeah.
Then it has team broadcasters, editor and columnist, wire services, radio, TV, all sports. Then it gives a restaurant, gives taxi companies, gives area hotels, even one in Annapolis, which is way the hell and gone from MCI Center.
Yeah, you have to be pretty desperate to.
Yeah. They're like, if you're traveling from BWI, why would you? Dulles is right next to the arena. Then it tells you directions to Piney Orchard and stuff like that and gives a schedule. I'm just like, wow, this is fascinating. You got notes, got rights holder stuff. Like, this is just hugely impressive.
Some of the old ones I have direct lines. It's like the president of the Habs, it has his direct line.
Like the hotline number?
Yeah, in the media guide. I think it has some of the, like, sports desk numbers in it, and like the radio station numbers, and like the direct line to the press box, like the direct phone line to the press box is printed in the media guide.
That I could see.
And you know, like faxes, and
I don't think there's telephones in the press box anymore.
No.
At least not ones connected to an outside line. I think everything's like internally now, like to the from the scores table up to the
replay. And I don't know if this was a direct line or if this was an outside line that went to the press box, but there was a direct press box line in the media guide. So, yeah. And then, you know, with the college media guides, it'd have the player's permanent address published. So, you know, he's the son of Doug and Barb who live at, you know, 131 Pleasant Street, Saskatoon, you know.
I wonder if that happens now.
I mean, you look at that now, and it feels creepy.
Dude, look at it then, I'm pretty sure it felt a little creepy, too, especially for college stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we had fun there, got some stuff, looked around, a lot of antique store things, as is their wont. Went to Mall of America after that, nothing really thing.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, I got that gopher shirt.
Yeah, you got some hockey shirts.
Yeah.
You found some hockey shirts.
I always find hockey shirts.
Yeah. And then, we went home. That was it.
Yep.
That was our Minneapolis quick trip weekend. So, it was fun. Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got nothing else, it's 51. We somehow made a almost hour podcast over something we had no plans on. Thanks to the people who helped crowdsource this.
Yeah.
We were just both burned out by real life. We're just like, let's just get out of here for a minute and forget about things.
Which was probably the best choice ever.
Oh, yeah. No, it was smart. Just to take some personal days.
Yeah.
Thank God for PTO. I tell you that much. I still think I got like 50 hours even after I took 16. So.
Ugh, lucky you.
I know. Accumulated every paycheck. 7 hours every paycheck, baby.
Yeah. Well, the good news is when you work late, then I can work late and then you know, build up some time off.
It works.
But, yeah.
All right, where can they find you?
NHL History Girl.
Yeah, and you can find, and that's on Instagram too. You said you're going to post stuff on Instagram. They can find you there as well, I assume.
Yes, mostly you have to be aware though that my Instagram is mostly pictures of my t-shirts, pictures of my cat, and random pictures from trips I take.
And like hockey stuff. And
yeah.
So you can find me at Scotty Waz. That's on every single platform you can think of. Mind you, it's going to be garbage. So, I'll tell you that,
Rachel. It's full of puns.
Full of puns, full of garbage, full just random shit. So, we'll get up on that. FaceoffHockeyShow.com. That's the big thing. That's the whole media faction we have going on here. Pushing media faction hard. That's on Wednesday nights. You can hear me in the recent episode talk about Esatikinen not coming through that door because it's open. And
every time I mention his name, you have like this twitch. It's amazing.
Like the curse of Tekken should have been a thing.
It
probably is, in all honesty. We just haven't pushed it hard for SummerSlam. Don't know what that means. That means it's time. Let's go get some food. It's dinner time almost. Cat's dancing for some food, I think. I don't even know where he's at. Where you at, Cat? Where you at? All right, so for Jen, I'm Scott. Take care of yourself and someone else. Has been the Soderstrom Bubble on the Face Off Hockey Show media faction at SDRStromBubble on Twitter. Follow us there for show updates, any kind of things out there. We might start getting a little bit more active on that. We're kind of feeling out the process of what the hell we're going to do with it. So
yeah.
So we'll go from there. All right, bye. Bye, everybody. Go. Just go home now.